Luzon and Visayas placed under yellow alert despite a more stable power supply this Wednesday. We'll talk to the spokesperson of the National Grid Corporation of the Philippines, Cynthia Labanza, later in the program. Seven jurors picked in the hush money trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump. A senior Israeli lawmaker hopeful his country's response to Iran's attack won't lead to a full-scale war. And in sports, the Los Angeles Lakers advance to the NBA playoffs. I'm Stanley Palisada. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and Facebook, glad you could join us. We begin with the Philippine Energy Department assuring the public of adequate power supply for the entire summer, even after major power grids in the country were placed on alert due to the extreme heat that caused electricity demand to spike. Alvin El Chico reports.
The Luzon electricity grid was plunged into red alert status until 11 p.m. on Tuesday after 19 power plants bogged down. The Visayas grid was also on yellow alert until 9 p.m. the same day due to insufficient power generation.
1,800 megawatts higit ang mga power plant na biglaan hong tumirip at meron po tayong karagdagang 300 megawatts na nakadiri o kulang ho ang kanilang inasahang output po ng kuryente. Kung ikukumpara nyo po, 700 megawatts lang po yung nakascheduled maintenance shutdown for Luzon. So malaki po talaga ang dagok ng unplanned shutdown when it comes to supply.
Power utility Meralco has announced a tentative rotating interruption schedule starting at 2 p.m., but supply was able to sustain the demand as the utility was able to muster enough participants for its Interruptible Load Program, or ILP. ILP means big businesses use their own power generators so that the limited power supply will remain sufficient for ordinary customers. Meralco says it remains to be seen if the situation will go back to normal by Wednesday.
If we need to implement measures such as rotating interruptions in some areas of our franchise, then we will inform our customers ahead of time. And to please bear with us in case that happens.
Based on the monitoring of the Philippine Rural Electric Cooperatives, some areas in Isabela under the cooperative Iselco 2 had experienced power interruption. The Energy Department had repeatedly assured earlier that the electricity supply will be enough for the entire summer season. DOE Assistant Secretary Mario Marasigan claims the sudden shutdown of a plant in Quezon triggered the red alert situation.
Bumigaw yung pagbilaw unit 1 and 2, that's 764 or 760 megawatts na nawala sa grid. Suspected boiler tube leak. So as we speak, nasa cooling down process pa sila.
But why would 18 other power plants bog down at the same time?
From plant outage, maintenance outage, biglang nag-extend. No? So bukod doon sa Masinloc, meron pa tayong ibang planta na kinukonfirm kailan sila makakabalik.
The DOE says some plants will only be back in operation by weekend, which means, aside from relying on the interruptible load program, consumers need to reduce electricity use to control demand and avoid power outage. Alvin El Chico, ABS-CBN News.
Philippine energy officials seeing more stable energy supply today, Wednesday. The National Grid Corporation says some plants are now back up and running in Luzon and Visayas after they went into forced outage. The Department of Energy earlier said a suspected boiler tube leak might be among the reasons behind the sudden forced outage of most of the power plants. Despite the better outlook, the NGCP says it will still place both Luzon and Visayas under yellow alert, starting at 1 in the afternoon until late evening. This as dozens of power plants are still on forced shutdown, while at least 8 are running on derated capacities. Only 1% of government's irrigation facilities have been affected by extreme heat. This is according to the Philippine Irrigation Administration, which attributes this to its preparedness for the hot weather. The months of March, April, and May are usually the hottest for the Philippines. But temperatures have been exacerbated by the prevailing El Nino. The country's El Nino task force has said the dry spell is projected to affect all but two Philippine provinces by the end of April.
Lahat naman po ano ho, ng ating irrigation system ay may epekto po ng El Nino. Pero dahil po dito sa ating alternate wetting and drying technology na tinatawag, nabawasan po namin yung mga affected po na areas. Kasi kung ginawa mo po itong AWD, nakakatipid ka ng 20 to 30% ng patubig at tumataas pa po ang yield ng ating mga farmer. Napaghandaan po ng husto ng NIA ito.
In other news, the Supreme Court ruling, the Commission on Elections committed grave abuse of discretion when it disqualified Smartmatic from bidding in the 2025 polls. Adrian Ayalin now joins us with the details of this story. Go ahead, Adrian.
Yes, Stanley, the Supreme Court has granted the petition filed by Smartmatic against the Commission on Elections on its disqualification to bid for the 2025 election. In the decision of the court promulgated on April 16, 2024, here in Baguio City, however, the contract awarded by VCOMELEC to Miru Systems was not nullified. The court cited considerations of equity, justice, practicality, and the doctrine of operative fact in the decision penned by Associate Justice Jose Maidas Marquez. The SC noted that the case started when Smartmatic received an invitation from COMELEC to attend the election and procurement summit for the 2025 election. Private respondents then filed petitions against Smartmatic before the COMELEC and bank, which ended with the commission disqualifying Smartmatic from participating in the bidding. Smartmatic then filed its petition before the SC. The SC emphasized in its decision that it granted the petition of Smartmatic because the COMELEC committed grave abuse of discretion when it disqualified Smartmatic before it had submitted any bid without any reference to the eligibility requirements prescribed by its bids and awards committee. As during a media briefing here in Baguio City, SC spokesperson Attorney Camille Ting said, Smartmatic did not suffer irreparable injury because the injury would have just been loss of profits and there are legal remedies that the company can take. In a statement, Smartmatic said it was vindicated by the Supreme Court decision and it is ready to explore further opportunities to contribute to the modernization of Philippine elections. Back to you, Stanley.
All right. Thank you so much for the update, Adrian Ayalin. Now, the Justice Department orders a probe into the alleged seditious statements made by House lawmaker Pantaleon Alvarez. More from Vivian Gulia.
Please withdraw your support to the chief executive.
This call from Davao del Norte 1st District Representative Pantaleon Alvarez will be the subject of an investigation ordered by Justice Secretary Jesus Crispin Remulla. Remulla says the probe will determine whether the lawmaker's remark has risen to the level of the crimes of sedition, inciting to sedition, or rebellion. Philippine law defines sedition as rising publicly and tumultuously to, among others, prevent the government or a government official from performing their duties. Rebellion, meanwhile, is rising publicly and taking arms against the government. But Alvarez defended his remarks, denying it falls under these crimes. He stressed that his call was for a peaceful withdrawal of support, adding that it was protected by freedom of speech. Alvarez, who is an ally of former President Rodrigo Duterte, issued the call to the armed forces of the Philippines in a rally in Tagum City last Sunday, expressing concerns that President Marcos Jr.'s policies in the West Philippine Sea risk further escalating tensions with China.
We do not want war dahil ang daming perwisyo, maraming buhay na mawawala. Okay naman ako imbestigahan, no? Kasi alam naman natin yung elements ng crime. Ng sedition at saka ng rebellion. Pag binasa natin yung crime of sedition, talaga nakalagay doon na may kaakibat na ano yan, yung violence. Wala namang violence na nangyari. Inciting to sedition, ako naiindigan pa rin na walang ganun. Nasa Bill of Rights yan, peaceably assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances.
House leaders also condemned Alvarez's remark, which they say undermined the stability of the government and the rule of law. House Majority Leader Manuel Jose Manix de Lipe called for legal action against Alvarez, while Cagayan de Oro 2nd District Representative Rufus Rodriguez believes such statement could trigger an ethics complaint against his fellow lawmaker from Mindanao.
And called for, especially from an elected official in the House of Representatives, to be calling for withdrawal of support. That is really rebellion. That is really seditious that they will withdraw support to our incumbent president, who has the mandate of the people. to govern our country as president. If others are minded, then that can be a basis for a complaint in the Ethics Committee.
Alvarez maintains he did nothing that constitutes disorderly conduct under the rules of the House of Representatives. Under the House rules, the House may, upon the recommendation of the Committee on Ethics, punish its members for any violation of the Code of Conduct and for disorderly behavior. The former House Speaker expressed readiness to respond should complaints be filed against him.
Option naman ng House of Representatives yan kasi meron tayong ano dyan, yung House Ethics Committee. Hindi, sasagutin na lang natin pag meron nag-aayon na reklamo.
Alvarez appealed for understanding if anybody was hurt by his remark, but he stands by his statement.
Kung meron mang nasaktan, di pasensya, pero para sabihin ko na nagkamali ako sa sinabi ko, hindi ako nagkamali. Yun talaga yung gusto ko sabihin.
The Philippine Navy has directed the 9th Marine Brigade to conduct an investigation and ask Alvarez, a Marine reservist, to explain the statement he issued. The Navy took exception to Alvarez's remark and reiterated its support and loyalty to the Constitution, the chain of command, and the President as the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. Vivian Gulia, ABS-CBN News.
Singapore's top diplomat expressing concern on the maritime row between Manila and Beijing. Singaporean Foreign Minister Vivian Balakrishnan sat down with his Philippine counterpart Enrique Manalo on Tuesday to discuss developments in the region and the bilateral relations between the two countries. Now, Balakrishnan asserts all parties involved must adhere to international law. He also believes there is a need for a code of conduct between ASEAN and China in the South China Sea.
Singapore has been watching recent developments in the South China Sea with concern. We hope that all parties will maintain open channels of communication, will preserve regional peace and stability, and ensure adherence to international law, including especially 1982 UNCLOS, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. The Code of Conduct will not resolve issues of sovereignty or issues of maritime entitlement, but it is important nevertheless because we believe it is one way to reduce tension.
Manalo meanwhile refutes Beijing's claims Manila has been violating its commitments in the West Philippine Sea. China's insisted Manila reneged on some of its promises, including towing away the rusting BRP Sierra Madre in Ayungin Shoal.
We've always said that the Philippines, in our dispute or in our approach to the issues in the West Philippine Sea, has always, always adhered to the rule of law. And in this, in particular, the UNCLOS and the arbitral award of 2016. So I think it's China which refuses to adhere to the arbitral award. So I'm not very clear what they mean by saying that we're not adhering to commitments.
A Philippine lawmaker amplifies calls for a House probe on the gentleman's agreement between the Duterte administration and China. Zambales Representative Jay Kong-hoon says with his constituents experiencing China's harassment firsthand, it is vital to know the details of the supposed deal. He adds the country's credibility, territorial integrity, and economic well-being are all at stake if details of the agreement won't be revealed.
Kailangan iisang boses lang tayo, no, lalong-lalo na sa pakikipag-usap sa China. Pero tandaan din natin, no, kailangan makita natin kung ano ba talaga na pag-usapan. Kailangan siguraduhin natin na ano, na meron tayong kredibilidad sa pakikipag-usap sa ibang bansa. Baka naman mamaya hindi na tayo paniwalaan dahil iba ang sinasabi ng China, iba ang sinasabi ng ating dating pangulo, no.
Kong-un adds the lower chamber will set the timeline for the inquiry once Congress resumes its sessions on April 29. Going back to our top story, we'll be speaking now with the spokesperson of the NGCP, Attorney Cynthia Alabanza, for an update on the country's power supply situation. Attorney Alabanza, welcome to Dateline Philippines.
Good morning.
All right. Now, the power now seems steady, but Luzon and Visayas are still on yellow alert. And we know that, you know, this is being monitored minute by minute. Is there any chance that will change or the power supply will improve?
Well, like you said, this is something that is very volatile and we are monitoring it constantly. Yesterday, we initially placed the Luzon grid on red alert and yellow alert, and the Visayas grid on yellow alert. But as the day went by, there were several other plants that went offline. So we had to downgrade these alert statuses. For Visayas, we had to downgrade to red alert, and the red alert for Luzon was extended. So we are looking out for anything similar that may happen through the day. So we will be making announcements as the developments happen.
And what is your evaluation? Is the situation today much better than yesterday when you had power plants even forced to shut down? Is it the same scenario you're expecting this afternoon?
Well, today the reason the situation got better was because a couple of plants went online, and there was another plant in the Luzon grid that went on what we call a must-run status, so that the supply situation improved a bit. So for today, the grid alert over the zone is only yellow from 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. And in the Visayas, it's also yellow alert from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m.
All right. What happened with the power plants? They were forced to shut down yesterday. Is that something that is normal? I mean, you know, when you encounter several of them having problems.
Well, I wouldn't want to call it normal because, you know, every year NGCP coordinates with the power plant so that we can arrange the maintenance schedule so that they won't all be going on shutdown at the same time to maintain, again, the stability of supply. However, it's really the unplanned maintenance shutdown. But again, though undesired, it really happens with any kind of machinery. It is unfortunate that there were many, many plants that have been on unplanned maintenance shutdown, some for months already. I was looking at the data yesterday. There was a very small plant that has been on shutdown in Luzon since August of 2023 and had not returned to the grid. And around of the 19 plants that were on unplanned maintenance shutdown yesterday, around more than half of those have been on long-term maintenance shutdowns already. It was really the bigger plants that shut down within April that had an impact. That's why we felt the red alert yesterday.
All right, so we're seeing a situation where the power supply is managed by just a few plants. What are the measures in place now to call out protocols or the alert system? What are you monitoring for you to make those calls?
Well, NGCP does monitor the supply and the demand situation so that we make these announcements on a regular basis. We ordinarily have projections several times. We have a year ahead and we have a day ahead, and we also have at the morning of, because these things can really shift within a matter of hours. So on the part of NGCP, because we are a transmission service provider, we're just ensuring that our transmission lines, especially those that are servicing these areas, are up and running so that whatever available energy is being manufactured by the plants can be transmitted immediately to the power consumers from the different utilities. However, I think this is something that NGCP has long advocated. We must really look at the entry of new stable supply. There, you know, it's a very complicated thing to manage the entry of generation. We have to look at not just the numbers and how much is coming in. We have to look at the kind of fuel. I have seen it's a very welcome development that there are many people who want, investors who want to come in. But a lot of them, I noticed, are more on the variable renewable energy. That means like solar and wind, which means that, you know, they can go offline anytime. But NGCP has always advocated for more baseload plants or plants that don't that you can reasonably expect them to be running for so long as they have fuel. Geography is also an important part of the planning for generation. And of course, on the part of transmission, we have to be ready to connect these plants when they come in. And it is, you know, with pride that we announced the energization of three major backbone lines in the last 12 months. So as far as the transmission is concerned, the lines are already available, but we really need to approach energy planning in a holistic manner, not just transmission, but the entire industry, including generation and distribution.
All right. Attorney Alabanza, yesterday's power supply challenge was mainly brought about by the fact that there was high demand. A lot of people were using cooling appliances, and this may have added and burdened the supply and transmission systems. Now, we know for a fact, at least PAGASA is saying, this kind of weather would persist still in the next couple of days or even weeks into the month of May. So what is your outlook now as far as power supply situation is concerned, transmission for Metro Manila first?
Again, that's absolutely correct. We have a projected peak demand for 2024 of about 13,800 megawatts more or less, and we expect that in the middle of May. So it's just middle of April. And the demand yesterday was, I think, a little over 13,000 megawatts. Mm-hmm. So we are expecting a bigger peak demand for the year. It's really when the power plants, when your supply falters, that the consumers will feel it. So this is something that, again, you cannot fix within a few days or weeks or even months, because power plants, additional generation capacity, they have a gestation period of anywhere between 5 to 7 years. So we really have to catch up with the entry of new capacity so that we can keep pace with the growing demand, especially since we're encouraging economic development, and that's really something that needs to be addressed.
Attorney Alabanza, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
All right, all right, hello. All right. All right, lastly, before we go, I just want to know if you've seen the peak of this already based on your projections at NGCP. Have we reached peak demand already, or expecting the situation to worsen in the next couple of weeks?
No, we are expecting the peak demand by mid-May.
Okay.
So we are expecting more demand for the year.
All right, on that note, we thank you so much for joining us. Attorney Cynthia Alabanza, spokesperson, NGCP. Have a good day. Up next, the second day of Donald Trump's historic criminal trial in New York concludes with the selection of seven jurors. The details when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Welcome back. BMI, a unit of Fitch Solutions, expects the Philippine peso to stay volatile in the short term due to the constant repricing of interest rates expectations in the U.S. It says despite weakening by around 2% year to date, the peso has held up relatively well compared to its regional peers, even defying its expectations for an appreciation in the first quarter. It expects the volatility to ease once the U.S. Federal Reserve embarks on its first cut in July, with the peso seen stabilizing at 56.50 to a dollar. ABS-CBN Corporation posted revenues of 18.5 billion pesos in 2023. That's as core regular advertising revenue for the year grew 16%, hitting 6.7 billion pesos. This helped offset the 7% decline in consumer sales revenue, mainly due to Sky Cable's lower subscription sales. Net loss before impairment, one-time gain, and taxes amounted to 4.4 billion pesos, lower than 2022's 5.8 billion. But including impairment loss, a significantly smaller one-time gain, and taxes, total net loss stood at 12.8 billion pesos. ABS-CBN, the parent firm of this news channel, is engaged in content production and distribution. A Philippine telco firm that's over a century old, eyeing nationwide expansion. Jackie Pascual tells us how Eastern Communications intends to catch a bigger market share outside Metro Manila.
The 145-year-old Eastern Communications is expanding further in the technological space. The telco is allotting 1.15 billion peso in capital expenditures this year to upgrade its equipment and expand network coverage.
Most of the capex right now is on the refresh, improving network technology and everything that we have in terms of the network component. Well, we still have a lot for expansion also.
After X number of years, your equipment becomes obsolete. You know, technology, you know, becomes obsolete quite quickly, and we intend to upgrade or refresh our network.
It is eyeing to raise its revenue from 4.3 billion pesos last year to 4.8 billion this year. And one way to do that is by expanding to so-called digital-ready provincial cities like Iloilo, Davao, Cagayan de Oro, and Bacolod.
where BPOs are heading towards because they're economic magnets, and that's so. Those are the areas where we are expanding to cover the SMEs, no, that are born out of these areas.
Eastern Communications is banking on the commencement of the Philippine Domestic Submarine Cable Network, which is considered the longest in the country, to roll out its services to more islands. The company, however, is only focused on business clients for now, as it offers ICT solutions and not just internet connectivity.
You sell connectivity together with ICT because they will be able to experience and enjoy connectivity only, uninterrupted connectivity, and with all the applications and whatnot, if they have ICT.
Data centers, no? We provide both data center hosting and as well as cloud hosting. So we have our own cloud offering called Eastern Cloud. No? And we also have other things such as cybersecurity.
Eastern Communications is seeing double-digit growth this year as it also plans to grow its 6.1% market share in the B2B segment this year. Jackie Pascual, ABS-CBN News.
Telco giant Globe warning the public against clicking links sent to them via text messages amid a rise in so-called spoofing. The scheme, the firm says, is run by scammers posing as network companies to access their credit card details and other sensitive information.
Ang nangyayari po, gumagamit po sila ng makina na tinatawag po IMSI Capture. Nag-impersonate ng cell tower. Yung mga scammer, like nasa backpack nila yan o nasa loob ng mga van, umiikot po sila. Tapos nun, ang radius niyan, ang lahat ng mga cellphone na malapit dun sa van, kukonek po doon yung mga cellphone. Pag kumonek po yung cellphone doon, kahit anong sender po, pwede na nilang spoof. Pwede po nilang gawin ang sender, Globe. Wala na po kaming ipapadalang mensahe. Kahit na official message ng Globe, wala na pong link yan.
World News Now, former U.S. President Donald Trump back in a Manhattan courtroom for the second day of his hush money trial. The jury taking shape with 7 people selected. A panel of 12 New Yorkers and 6 alternates will ultimately be chosen before leaving the court. Trump again slammed Judge Juan Merchan and blamed the Biden administration for his legal troubles.
He's a conflicted judge. As you know, we're in appeal. I don't think there has ever been a judge more conflicted than this one, so we'll see how that all works out. We're having a hard time with the New York State system. It's under watch by the whole world, and it's not looking very good. So we think we have a very conflicted, highly conflicted judge. He shouldn't be on the case, and he's rushing this trial, and he's doing as much as he can for the Democrats. This is a Biden-inspired witch hunt, and it should end, very quickly.
The trial will resume Thursday. Trump faces 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels shortly before the 2016 elections. He has pleaded not guilty and has denied the encounter. The hush money case is one of 4 criminal prosecutions Trump faces, but the other 3 may not go to trial before the election. And as Trump sits in the courtroom, U.S. President Joe Biden kicked off a multi-city tour of the battleground state of Pennsylvania. It included a stop in his hometown of Scranton, where he pointed out a stark difference between him and Trump, painting his rival as an elitist and him an average American at heart. Biden made a case for raising taxes for the rich to fund his administration's social projects. Biden has proposed a 25% minimum tax rate for billionaires.
You know, people like Donald Trump learned very different lessons. He learned the best way to get rich is inherited. Not a bad way. He learned that paying taxes was something people who work for a living did, not him. He learned that telling people you're fired was something to laugh about. I guess that's how you look at the world when you're in Park Avenue, Mar-a-Lago. But if you grew up in a place like Scranton, nobody handed you anything. You paid your taxes. You made sure being told you're fired wasn't entertainment. It was a nightmare that people worried about.
With 19 electoral votes and voters who swing between backing Democrats and Republicans, Pennsylvania is a top prize in the November election. A third meeting of Israel's war cabinet set for Tuesday, put off until Wednesday. The meeting is meant to decide on a response to Iran's attack on Israel. A senior Israeli lawmaker says when they do respond to Tehran's unprecedented drone and missile strike over the weekend, the aim will be to send a message of deterrence. The head of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee insists Israel is not interested in a full-scale war with Iran.
We'll have to react. Iranians will know that we reacted. And I sincerely hope that it will teach them a lesson that you can't attack a sovereign country just because you find it doable. I sincerely hope that they will understand that it's not in their interest to continue this kind of exchange of blows. We are not interested in a full-scale war. We are not, as I've said, in the business of revenge. We have to make it clear that the Iranians can't decide that now every week they will be able to launch missiles or send drones it will pass unnoticed.
The U.S. warning of new sanctions against Iran in the coming days or its attack on Israel. The U.S. has targeted more than 500 Iranian individuals and entities connected to terrorism and terrorist financing since the start of the Biden administration. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the additional sanctions could seek a reduce Iran's capacity to export oil. Some EU member states have also asked for an expansion of existing sanctions against Tehran. Meanwhile, Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon kill 3, including a Hezbollah field commander. The Israeli military said Ismail Bass was the commander of Hezbollah's coastal sector. He was allegedly involved in planning rocket and anti-tank missile attacks on Israel. Hezbollah has confirmed Bass's death, but it did not elaborate on his role in the organization. Dubai's major international airport diverts scores of incoming flights as heavy rain slashed the United Arab Emirates, causing widespread flooding around the desert country. The world's busiest air hub for international passengers confirmed a halt to arrivals early Tuesday night before announcing a gradual resumption more than 2 hours later. Dubai, the Middle East's financial center, has been paralyzed by torrential rains that caused floods across the UAE and Bahrain and left 18 dead in Oman. The UAE's weather agency has advised residents another wave of unstable weather is expected to continue until Wednesday in scattered areas across the country. A heat wave is baking Mexico's capital city. Mexico City logged a maximum temperature of 34.2 degrees Celsius Monday, surpassing a 1998 record. Elsewhere in the country, temperatures are expected to further rise. Authorities warn the mercury could climb to 45 degrees Celsius in several states, including Guerrero, Oaxaca, Chiapas, and Tabasco. March 2024 was so far the warmest month on record in the world. Over in Myanmar, extreme heat forces the military junta to move detained former leader Aung San Suu Kyi from prison to house arrest. The junta said a transfer is needed to protect prisoners, especially the elderly, from heat stroke. The 78-year-old Nobel laureate has been detained by the military since it overthrew her government in a 2021 coup. She is serving a 27-year prison sentence for crimes ranging from treason to bribery. She has repeatedly denied the charges. Still ahead, France begins a 100-day countdown for the Paris Olympics. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on AMC. Welcome back. In sports, LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers are through to the NBA playoffs. LeBron had a near triple-double with 23 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists as the Lakers outlasted the New Orleans Pelicans in their play-in matchup, 110-106. Now, Anthony Davis added 20 points and 15 rebounds for the Lakers, who will face the defending champions Denver Nuggets in the first round of the playoffs. Paris marks 100 days until the 2024 Paris Olympics, with preparations for the Games entering the final stretch. All permanent infrastructure for the Games are now ready, and the building of temporary sites has begun. The Olympic torch, which was lit in Olympia on Tuesday, will reach France on May 8. Organizers are counting on the torch relay to swing the mood across the country. Last month, a poll showed that 57% of the population felt little or had no enthusiasm for the Games, which will run from July 26 to August 7. In entertainment, a new Taylor Swift comic book set to hit the shelves this month. Tidal Waves Comics says the sequel to Female Force Taylor Swift delivers an engaging narrative that delves deeper into the pop superstar's philanthropic endeavors. Going beyond the glitz and glamour of Swift's stardom, it spotlights her contributions to various charitable causes, underscoring her commitment to making a difference in the lives of her fans and the larger community. And in line with Swift's philanthropic spirit, a portion of the sales will go to the Humane Society. And before we go, ABS-CBN's Hollywood correspondent Yong Chavez sat down with director Zack Snyder to talk about his highly anticipated sequel, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Take a look.
To fight.
The epic conclusion of the two-part sci-fi story about ordinary people and warriors rising against their oppressors arrives this week with Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Just like Part 1, which came out last December, Zack Snyder is the film's writer, director, as well as producer and cinematographer.
I'm really looking forward to having viewers be able to go back and see movie one again and go straight into movie two and really have that almost like you're binging a giant TV series and really come out the other end, having like been on this insane journey. You know?
It took Snyder almost 30 years to bring this story to life. The filmmaker wrote Rebel Moon on and off between his other Hollywood projects.
How do you feel about the supportive fandom surrounding your work so much that Snyderverse and Snyder Cat are now part of the lexicon?
It makes me work harder. It makes me want to make it better. And crazier and cooler. I just keep trying to live up to, you know, their expectations, you know, as best I can. I'll be excited for them to see the director's cuts, of course, of these movies that come out at the end of the summer. They're 3 hours each and really crazy and, you know, giant sequences that aren't in the movie at all now. Like, they're R-rated and they're super sexy and super violent, and I hope that that's fun for everybody.
Famous for blockbuster films like 300 and the Henry Cavill-era Superman movies, Snyder admits it still took a long time and a lot of effort to convince studio executives to make the Rebel Moon films.
You know, as a successful person, how do you deal with challenges?
Making movies, getting a film made in Hollywood is not easy, especially a movie like this, which is a completely original IP and no one's ever seen before, and you have to convince someone that this is cool. You know, steel sharpens steel, as they say. So I think that's the thing that we've definitely kind of welcomed, you know, that I've welcomed, is the challenges of creating. And I think that because it's made us better. And so it's always an honor to get an opportunity to make a movie like this, because I know how rare it is. And so I don't take it for granted.
Snyder's wife, Deborah, is Zack's longtime collaborator and is also one of the producers of Rebel Moon. Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, with a strong ensemble cast led by Sofia Boutella, will premiere on Netflix on April 19. Yong Chavez, ABS-CBN News, here in Hollywood.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Stanley Palisade. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on the YouTube channel of ABS-CBN News and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, everyone, as you keep it here on the news channel.